Nudge your neighbor and tell them your favorite. Where's your favorite place to eat? Go ahead, talk to somebody. I wonder what was Jesus' favorite eating place. You know, he had plenty to choose from. Hillside picnics with thousands of diners. Waterfront meals with freshly caught seafood. He even had fast food, if you will, passing through the fields with his disciples and picking the grain. Wedding banquets, upper room dinners with the leadership team. All kinds of wonderful experiences we read about of Jesus sharing meals. And of course, Jesus said, I have food to eat that you do not know about. My food is to do the will of my Father. But, you know, when it really comes to a particular eating place for Jesus, it seems Jesus stopped often at Lazarus, Mary, and Martha's home. They were dear friends to him. And I got to thinking, I probably like eating at home a lot. But anyway, I have restaurants that I prefer. There's no doubt about it. Some special places I like to go. But I'd have to say it's really not so much the place or even what's on the menu, but it has to do with the people I'm with. I enjoy breaking bread with friends and family. That's when it's really meaningful. One of the places, though, that I've grown the most in my life is honestly around the table. It's sharing in a meal. The Lord has instructed me and shaped me, enlightened me, corrected me. He's deepened me while breaking bread with family or friends or mentors or sometimes even with first-time acquaintances, and they've instructed me. But another significant growing place for me has been the table of the Lord. Gathering here Sundays with church family and praising and hearing the word and breaking bread together. Communing with Christ and his church is what really feeds me, and that's special. So today, though, I'd like for us to go to the household of Mary, Martha, and Lazarus, and let's gather around their table and let's be fed like them in breaking bread with Jesus. Luke's Gospel, chapter 10. Starting with verse 38, it records one time when they extended hospitality to Jesus and company at their home. And then a little bit later in the sermon, we're going to look at another memorable time when they also opened their home for a festive meal that's recorded in John 12. But let's start here in Luke chapter 10, verse 38. As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. And she had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet, listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. And she came to him and asked, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do all the work by myself? Tell her to help me. Martha, Martha, the Lord answered, you are worried and upset about so many things, but only one thing is needed. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her. So Martha, I guess in our view, we might say that she had the gift of Southern hospitality. You know what I'm talking about here? She was a servant, no doubt, and that was her love language. That's the way she communicated, and probably every nook and cranny of that house had been cleaned because Jesus was coming over, and the beds were made, fine china comes out, and the tastiest recipe she has. You know, the one that everyone raves about. That's what I'm serving Jesus, you know. And you know, at our house, we have this lovely fine china that is seldom used. We only use it when Jesus comes over. I'm telling you. It's just not, we don't use it that much. It's for special guests and special occasions. Now, don't be offended if you come to my house and I feed you on paper plates or something. It doesn't mean that you're not special to me, but we do reserve this china, you know, and I think Martha is putting out the very best that she can. She's busy pouring it out in service of Jesus, and she's trying to do a good thing. She's very hardworking. She's getting it done. She's doing it in line with her gifts and her passions. And so this is a wonderful thing that Martha's doing. And to tell you the truth, I like people like Martha. I do. I really like people like Martha. Truth is, we need more Marthas around here, you know, who will step up to serve and do nothing halfway. I mean, they get it done. You know what I'm talking about? We need that. And sometimes, sometimes Christians might be thinking, you know, I don't want to be like Martha, you know. But we need some Marthas. So step up. And I want you to notice that in this text, all the way, Jesus didn't really correct Martha for serving. He didn't say what she was doing is wrong, okay? But he called her to a better thing. You see, you can be doing what's right, but go for the better thing. You can be doing the right thing, but go for the better thing. We're like Martha a lot of times. We're cooking it up. We're proud of our work and we're excited about what God's doing in our lives, doing in me, you know. And then Jesus says, hey, you're doing it right, but you're doing it wrong. And see, it's not so much about doing church and the quality of the service and how much you get thanked. I want a trophy. I want one. You know, I want to be a hero for Jesus. Don't I want to be a superhero for him if I can. I want to leave my mark. I just want to make a difference in this world. Don't you? I want to do. But we have to acknowledge this tension, the pride, the lower flesh satisfying aims that battle in our hearts, even when we're doing good things. Because you can be doing the right thing, but go for the better thing. Martha felt so righteous. She felt so righteous. Notice she didn't call Mary out. She told Jesus to call her out. You see that there? Have you ever complained to God about all the stuff that you do for the Lord and the church and your family or whatever, and then you complain that nobody else is helping, no one else seems to care, and you pray that the Lord would convict them. Straighten them out. Get them going, Lord. And Jesus said, Martha, Martha. Now, you know you're in trouble when Jesus uses your name twice. And we see that other places. Simon, Simon, he said to Peter, Satan has asked to sift you like wheat. You're in trouble, boy. Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me? Martha, Martha. You know, growing up in my house, if I heard my first and middle name, I knew I was in big trouble. You know, I knew it. And maybe it was that way and you hear your whole name, man, you better duck. But I honestly picture a smile on Jesus' face as he kind of shakes his head slightly and gently says, Martha, Martha. And he lovingly makes her aware that she's just too busy. And we might call it holy busy. You know what I'm talking about? And what she's doing is a very good thing, but there's something better right now. She had lost the focus of her ministry. She had gotten distracted by all that needed to be done and may have forgotten who it was all for and who was present in her house. What's the purpose of my serving? What is the most important thing that I need to do right now? He said, Mary has chosen the better thing. She's chosen what's really needed, the one thing that's needed right now. You ain't getting none of my casserole. You know, I don't know. Maybe she was having a hard time here. But Jesus is speaking into her heart. Do you ever lose focus? Do you ever take your eyes off Jesus? You get so busy doing all kinds of things that you fail to drink deeply of him. So busy that you just totally miss the point, that you miss him. You don't hear what he's trying to say to you, and you're missing. You're overlooking the gifts that he's trying to give to you, and you fail to see what it's really all about. Bruce Larson tells of a getaway day with his wife and 4-year-old son. And as nature buffs, they really love to get outdoors and hike. And so they're looking for a new excursion on a very beautiful day in Southern California. And as they drove further and further away from civilization, Larson spotted a sign, Naturalist Camp. And it sounded perfect for his family. And so he turned down this remote road in search of some nature trails that they could hike. And as they came around this bend, to Larson's horror, coming toward them are five nude bicyclists. And what are we going to do now? And so he tried to turn the car around, but about the time he got at crossways in the narrow road, here they came and they just circled around the car the best they could and rode on by. And their four-year-old just stared wide-eyed at all this. And Larson gave his wife a look and just don't say anything, you know. And so finally the cyclists went on down the way and they were gone. And he got the car turned around and they decided they better get out of this area and head back to the main road. And finally, their boy exclaimed, "Wow, Mom and Dad, did you see that? They weren't wearing safety helmets." Sometimes we miss the obvious. And Martha was distracted. But Mary was so taken by Jesus that she sat at his feet. And she tried to soak in everything he said. Everything else diminished in importance. And when we break bread with Jesus, you see, we are nourished by the presence and message of Jesus. He feeds our soul deeply. Sometimes you can be in the right fellowship, be in church on Sunday. That's a good place to be. But we better be sure that we're devouring as much as we can while we have the opportunity. Go for the better thing. Listen to the right things. Say no to some good things. Stop worrying about so many things and focus on the best thing. Mark Scott tells of a missionary to Sudan who is taking precious gifts of seed to provide life-sustaining food source to people there, a gift that would keep on giving perennially to starving people if they would use it properly, if they would cultivate and harvest and not just feed themselves, but plant again with the from the harvest, you know. And so they would keep having food. And he came across a group in his travels of Africans. They were meeting under a tree and singing, and he knew what that was. He knew what that was. He correctly discerned that these were Jesus' followers and they had gathered in the shade of this tree for a church service. And so he approached them with a big smile and asked what they were doing. And they stopped their song and dance and joyfully said, "We're worshiping Jesus. We're worshiping Jesus." "Do you know Jesus?" they asked. And he said, "Well, yes, I do." And so, "Yeah, he knows Jesus. He knows Jesus." And they began to sing and dance some more, you know, and they're just praising God for that. And then they turned to him and said, "We heard there's a book. We heard there's a book." And he confirmed, "Well, yes, there is a book. There's a book. There's a book." And they began to dance and chant and shout and they're carrying on. And they said, "Do you have the book? Do you have the book?" And he said, "Well, yes, I have the book." But he was starting to feel ashamed because the truth is he had several copies of the Bible when apparently they had none. And they excitedly chanted and danced and praised Jesus that there's a book and this man had the book. And they were so excited. And so he said with a big grin, he said, "Look, I have brought seeds for you. And Christians from America have donated these seeds to provide food and a future for your family and your people." And he was so proud to give them these things. And they stared for a moment, puzzled. And then they responded, "Well, we humbly thank you for your gift. But can you give us the book first?" See, they understood, like Mary, the priority. What truly gives life, what's truly needed. You can be doing right things, but go for the better thing. As I read through this count, that it reminds me that Jesus grows us at the table, even in our frustrations and with all our differences. He speaks into our lives and he nourishes us toward greater maturity in the context of fellowship, of breaking bread. Mary and Martha were sisters, but you know what? They were different from each other. Do you have siblings? Do you have kids raised in the very same household, but they're different as night and day? Have you experienced that? It's true in my house. Martha was a servant. Mary's more of a seeker. Martha's love language is doing things for others, while Mary's more of meaningful interaction. Martha was an achiever. Mary's more of a relater, you know. And so Martha, doing a good thing, was feeling frustrated with her sister for not pitching in when there was so much that needed to be done, in her view. And you know what? And around this table, in this diverse fellowship of Western Hills Church of Christ, we're going to experience some differences. We will. Assorted cultural backgrounds, religious backgrounds, various styles and preferences and opinions and ways of doing things. Different expectations. And sometimes those things will collide, even grate us sometimes. It's not the way we like it. But when we break bread with Jesus, he nurtures us. He grows us in spite of and through our frustrations and our differences. He makes us better. Once there was a documentary filmed on two famous NBA players, Magic Johnson and Larry Bird. And in this documentary, a Converse commercial from 1986 was featured. And I remember that commercial. It was shot in French Lick, Indiana at Bird's place, featuring Magic arriving in his limo to play Larry Bird one-on-one on his home court. And the two were renowned rivals on the basketball court, and they really had no speaking relationship. And Converse had to convince them to star in this commercial together. And the shoot was quite awkward until the first lunch break. And Magic was headed off to eat on his own and do his own thing when Larry Bird informed him that his mom had made lunch and had invited Magic to join them. And so that meal around Larry Bird's mom's table changed everything. In Larry's words, it was at the table that I discovered Irvin Johnson. I never liked Magic, but I liked Irvin a lot. But Irvin didn't come out until I met him at mom's table. And the two have been friends since. In fact, Magic Johnson was diagnosed with HIV, as most of you know. And one of the first calls he made was to Larry Bird. Amazing what a little hospitality around a table can do. Breaking bread together. It brings down the barriers. And I'm wondering, who aren't you eating with? Who aren't you eating with? I think we miss significant work of the Lord in and through our lives, in our fellowship, when we fail to break bread with people from different generations than us, different colors, different backgrounds, different education, different preferences and politics and reputation and priorities. We have to be intentional. We have to be intentional. I've been encouraging you all month, please break bread with someone who needs Jesus this month. We've got to be intentional. Because we can be doing right things, but we've got to go for the better things. Well, let's move now to John's Gospel, chapter 12, to another meal at this very same home, a different occasion. John's Gospel, chapter 12. We'll start with verse 1, where it says, 6 days before the Passover, Jesus arrived at Bethany, which is right next to Jerusalem, right close to Jerusalem, where Lazarus lived, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. Here a dinner was given in Jesus' honor. Martha served while Lazarus was among those reclining at the table with him. Now, this dinner party is in honor of Jesus. And did you notice who's serving again? There's Martha, right? And hopefully with more focus this time on what's going on. But anyway, who's reclining at the table with Jesus and his disciples? It's Lazarus. And that's significant because in the very previous chapter of John's Gospel, Lazarus had got sick and he died. He died, and Jesus didn't show up until Lazarus was dead and buried for 4 days. But then Jesus stunned the crowd of eyewitnesses, and you can be sure that this made national news at that time. I'm serious. It made national news when Jesus called Lazarus out of that tomb, raised him from the dead. And no wonder they're having a Thanksgiving feast. No wonder the multitudes hailed him as the Messianic King when he rode into Jerusalem not long after this on a donkey colt. No wonder the Jewish leaders were hopping mad and determined to kill him. The evidence of Lazarus was so undeniable, so compelling. Jesus absolutely is Lord. And so they wanted to get rid of him. They wanted to silence that guy. He was stealing their thunder, stealing their crowds. When we break bread with Jesus and his followers, we're nourished by the evidence and testimony about Jesus. See, you can be there for the meal, for the party, for the good fellowship, which is good. You know what? I'm glad you're a part of it. It's really great, but don't miss the profound evidence and testimony about Jesus that's all around you. Some gathered to see this guy Lazarus, the guy who was once dead and came back to life. In our culture, that would have been a media flurry, as if you can imagine. Good Morning America, Ellen, 60 Minutes, and all of them. And the interviewers were, you know, what was it like to be dead, Lazarus? What was it like? What are you going to do with your second opportunity at life, Lazarus? People would be crying, can I have your autograph, Lazarus? And while they're swirling around Lazarus, some people are missing the one who made it happen. See, Lazarus' life, his resurrected life, was a spotlight on Jesus. He was evidence of the lordship of Jesus. And this church family is full of resurrection stories that validate the truth about our Lord. Because addicts to sober, atheists to believers, broken to whole, selfish to selfless, foolish to wise, destroyers to builders, materialists to generous, believers to followers, wounded to healed, fearful to courageous, liars to integrity, indifferent to passionate, random to purposeful, hateful to forgiving, bitter to reconciled, prejudiced to loving, sinful to Christ-like, and on it goes. Hey, just hear each other's stories. You got to hear each other's stories. Don't just be a church attender. Let the reality of Jesus Christ in our midst wash over you and convict you. See what Jesus is doing in our lives. You can be doing the right thing, but go for the better thing. Now, there's something else that's interesting in this account of this dinner party at Lazarus, Mary, and Martha's house. I want you to check out the verses 9 through 11 here. As while all this meal and festivities is going on, John adds this, verse 9. Meanwhile, a large crowd of Jews found out that Jesus was there and came, not only because of him, but also to see Lazarus, whom he had raised from the dead. And so the chief priests made plans to kill Lazarus as well, for on account of him, many of the Jews were going over to Jesus and putting their faith in him. And remember, we talked about with Simon the Pharisee a couple of weeks ago, if you were here, and he was hosting Jesus for a dinner, and crowds of gawkers would show up. This was not unusual, they would kind of hang out on the fringe, all around the courtyard, all around the back edge of the room, or whatever, and they would just kind of listen in or watch what was going to happen. They wanted to be a part of it, even though they weren't participating in the meal. And evidently, that's what's happening here too. People were watching. The Jewish religious leaders showed up in the crowd to see Lazarus for themselves. They were watching Jesus as well. They're trying to scrutinize, concoct ways to kill Jesus and Lazarus. But other witnesses in that crowd were moved by Lazarus to believe in Jesus. Here's my point. Please don't overlook that others are watching. There are people yet to believe in our fellowship in this room on most Sundays, and they're watching you and me to see if Jesus is for real. They're watching the way you worship, the way you interact. They're watching. They're watching if what you do today is the same as on Monday. They're watching. You have neighbors that know you get up and go to church every Sunday. They know that, and they also know if something becomes more important than going to church on Sunday. They know that, too, if you're not here. They're watching to see if Jesus is for real. Paul said, when we come, when we gather to break bread, we proclaim the Lord's death until he comes. We're announcing him. We're testifying about him just by being in the fellowship and by breaking bread together. We need you here. We want you here, but always recognize that other people are watching. They're watching. So you can be doing the right thing, but go for the better thing by being evidence of Jesus. You have friends and co-workers who know that you follow Christ. And they are examining the evidence in your life. Has a resurrection really taken place in you? They're watching the way you work, the language you use, the jokes you tell, conversations you have, how you do things, how you treat people. They're watching everything. What are the priorities and the values in your life? They're listening. They're watching. And you are a contemporary Lazarus because they see the transformation, the resurrection in your life, and they marvel. They wonder where it came from. Is it genuine? And could this kind of change happen in my life? So as you interact, as you break bread with them, you're undeniable living evidence that Jesus is Lord, and there is hope in him. Your personal testimony about what Jesus has done for you in your life is powerful. John reports in verse 11, many people believe because of Lazarus. You're Lazarus. Well, all this was nice. It was appropriate to have a dinner party to honor Jesus after he raised Lazarus from the grave. You know, how wonderful. That's worth celebrating. Lazarus and Martha, they're hosting this. They're doing a good thing. You can be doing the right thing, but go for what? The better thing. And once again, Mary takes this honor banquet to a whole new level. Look in verse 3 of John 12. Then Mary took about a pint of pure nard, an expensive perfume, and she poured it on Jesus' feet and wiped his feet with her hair. We've seen something like that at Simon the Pharisee's house, similar. And the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. I mean, it just diffused all over the place. This place is a festive thing. Everyone's marveling. Everyone's appreciative. And there's food and everything. The place is buzzing. There's crowds gathering trying to... I mean, it's a buzzing... And suddenly the room explodes with the silent fragrance of expensive perfume. And there's your sister Mary at the feet of Jesus again, pouring oil over his feet, wiping them with her hair. I mean, she's got her hair uncovered. And it's humble adoration. A poignant scene. It was very personal. And at the same time, public. It was extreme. But heartfelt. It was costly. But worth it. Mary reminds us that at the table we can be nourished in worship and sacrifice for Jesus. This was party stopping. What she did was scandalous, lavish gesture. And instead of sparking awe and participation, in some it sparked outrage and controversy. Look at verse 4. One of his disciples, Judas Iscariot, who was later to betray him, objected. Why wasn't this perfume sold and the money given to the poor? I mean, it's worth a year's wages. And he didn't say this because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief, and as a keeper of the money bag, he used to help himself to what was put into it. Leave her alone, Jesus replied. It is intended that she should save this perfume for the day of my burial, and you will always have the poor among you, but you will not always have me. On the surface, Judas makes a pretty good argument, doesn't he? I mean, you're talking a year's worth of wages. That's the value of this perfume. You're just pouring it out. A year's worth of wages and it evaporates. It's gone right now. Could you do that? Could you do that? Just pour it all out? Would you bring that as an offering next Sunday? We're going to have a great offering. A whole year's wages, put it in for Jesus. Could you do that? That's what Mary did. That is extreme. And you know what? He's saying, look, we could help the poor, the needy. And you know what? Caring and social justice, these things are vital. They're biblical. They're right. They're good. But what's your motive? What's it about? Giving to Jesus. Adoring and worshiping Him is the priority. Making Him central. Paul reminds us in 1 Corinthians 13 that we can do all the right things without really loving Jesus. He said, if I give all I possess to the poor and surrender my body to the flames, but have not love, I gain nothing. It's meaningless. You can be doing the right thing, but go for the better thing. My friend called me this week and said, have you ever heard of the Halifax explosion? Have you? Have you heard of the Halifax explosion? I had to look it up because I didn't know about it. It's a fascinating story, actually a sad story. A terrible collision took place December 6th, 1917, during World War I era in the Harbor Strait when a French military cargo ship loaded with munitions and fuel was struck by a smaller Norwegian cargo vessel carrying relief supplies and wasn't navigating in the proper ways through the channel and all that. And so an out-of-control fire sparked as a result of this collision and eventually created a massive explosion, the equivalent of 2.9 kilotons of TNT, the largest man-made explosion until Hiroshima. The explosion was so big, it was one-fifth the power of the Hiroshima bomb. This was a big boom. I mean, this was incredible. And people came out on the shores. They saw this fire out in the harbor. And people are watching. You know how people do. And they're all out there watching. And then boom. And all structures within a half mile were just obliterated. 2,000 lives were lost. 9,000 more injured. The pressure wave from that blast snapped trees and demolished buildings, bent rails, tossed boats, shattered nearly every window in the city. Every building within a mile and a half were damaged or destroyed. Additional 12,000 homes were severely damaged. A resulting tsunami threw vessels inland. Buildings washed away. And infernos erupted all throughout Halifax. All throughout it, you know, and it was just a horrifying, horrifically devastating event. Now, it so happens that Nova Scotia and Massachusetts across the harbor there, across the bay, really didn't get along, even though they were allies in the war, but they didn't like each other, to say it mildly. There was this bitter animosity between them for years and years and years. But within just 2 hours of getting word of that explosion, the governor of Massachusetts sent hundreds of medical and recovery personnel and supplies to help out. In fact, long after the initial cleanup and recovery effort, Massachusetts sent trainloads of relief aid and personnel to continue in the recovery time. It was a great bond that was forged in that time. And to this day, Nova Scotia sends a large Christmas tree that is erected in Boston Commons as an expression of thanks for the assistance provided by the Boston Red Cross and the Public Safety Committee during the most memorable crisis of their history. That catastrophic blast took place a century ago now, but even today they keep sending the trees because, in their words, it's never time to stop saying thank you. Mary couldn't thank Jesus enough for what he had done for her and her family. Can you? Can you? What will you pour out? Our souls are nourished each week as we meet here to break bread and share in the cup of thanksgiving. And ironically, we're fed as we empty our most heartfelt praise and we pour out our most extreme gifts to Jesus. But I'm afraid so often in American churches, our worship becomes less about Him and it honestly becomes more about us. And the moment that happens, we lose everything that we need most. I promise you, your soul will not be nourished if you're focusing on yourself. How well you like the music. How well you like the preaching. What you're getting out of it. How much you put in the offering. How righteous you think you've been this week. All the people that you've helped. Was the volunteer ministry you performed for the church fulfilling and was it appreciated? Were people nice to you? Does anyone really care about what you're going through today? The moment these things are the center of your attention, Jesus is not in the picture. And your soul is not being fed. Your soul is fed only when Jesus is central and He's the all-consuming focus and you are overwhelmed by Him and His love and His Word and you just have to find a way to express that. You can't contain it and it doesn't matter what the particulars are in a service. It's you pouring yourself out. It's us together pouring ourselves out and breaking bread and communing with Him and with one another. That's what it's about. You can be doing the right thing. Go for the better thing. Please go for the better thing. Develop a deep, abiding relationship with Jesus who is Savior and Lord. Break bread with the bread of life and His people. And you're going to be nourished by His presence and His message. And you will be nourished by the evidence and the testimony about Jesus in this fellowship. And you will be nourished in worship and sacrifice as you pour out your love to Him. And that's when you'll be fed. That's when you'll be changed. That's when Jesus gets traction in your life. Some people have teased me because I'm not a very conversational preacher. Because Jesus and His Word, they move me. And I don't know how else to say, I don't know how else to communicate it. I don't know how else. So we break the bread. One of the things that the Lord invited us to do, challenged us to do, taught us to do, is when we meet together to remember Him, to break the bread that reminds us of His body and to partake of the cup that reminds us of that covenant that we share in His blood, the sacrifice He made for us, and that relationship that He established by His death, burial, and resurrection. And so every Lord, we set up the tables in the four corners of the room. And this is not a trivial thing. This is not a routine thing. It's not a routine thing to break bread with Jesus. Get close to Him. Be at His feet and pour yourself out and let Him pour in this fellowship. Think of the people who are here and what He's doing in our lives It's a family meal as we break bread together. So I pray that this will be a very, very meaningful time for you. It is for me. We always extend the opportunity for anyone who would like to put their faith in Jesus, what he did for them on the cross, to receive new life, forgiveness of sins, a new start with him living in you, your sins washed away in the waters of baptism. So if you want to take that step today to be baptized into Christ and start following him, just find me here in the front while others are partaking, and we'll help you take that step.